Hey team, welcome to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast, the podcast where we actually explore the minds of leaders from all around the agriculture and agribusiness space about what it takes to lead intentionally in this industry today. My friends, if there's some value in here for you today, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast, share this with someone who needs to hear the message of what it takes to be intentional. Let's get into the show. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast. This is Mark Jewell, your host, and today I'm joined by Carrie Crum from AgriTechnovation. It's a mouthful, but it sounds good when it comes out, man. Thanks for being on here with me.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, awesome. All right, Carrie, everybody gets the same question at the onset. And that is, what does it mean for you to be intentional?
So for me, being intentional means that I'm trying to stay focused on what I'm planning to do and how I'm going to move through the process while I'm doing it. So just having a mindset of being in the moment and with a little bit of fore planning and a little bit of shifting on the fly when I'm in the moment. So, and also trying to stay focused on the outcome. So it's really kind of a 360, in my situation, would be a 360 view of what I'm doing. And then, so it's kind of like, you know, plan, execute, shift, focus on results, and then review. So that, to me, is kind of how I do intention.
Cool. I like it. So you've got a big background in sales, in the grocery space, or the food space, right?
Food space and the farm space, both. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Very good. And now you're applying that into more of an ag manufacturing, ag retail space. So I'm just curious, you know, what are some of those lessons that you've learned? We talked a little bit about this off the recording. What are some lessons you've learned that have that really apply to bringing intention into that sales process and developing customer relationships?
So I think I have a general philosophy that when customers who I'm interacting with ask me, you know, they'll try to label me as a salesman. And mm-hmm. I tell them I'm not a salesman. I'm not selling anything. And like, well, why are you even here? I said, well, I'm here to help you. Right. I'm here. I've got a bunch of tools in my toolbox but I don't know what tools are going to fit your particular job. So if you got a minute, let's sit down and chat about some of your challenges. I work with growers around you. So I know some of the problems, and you may have some or many or all or none of those problems, but I think it's just taking the mindset that I'm a problem solver with the customer, and I'm really there to just ask him a lot of questions. And I think asking questions for me is what drives my sales process. I tell my salespeople that we don't sell anything, and they look at me like I'm crazy. And I said, I don't sell anything at all. I said, I'm there to find out how I can help somebody. And yeah. And the other thing that I really focus on for myself is that when I walk onto into a prospect's office, and I still do quite a bit of cold calling, is I take the position that I'm there to help them, and they can choose to accept my help or not. It's up to them, but I'm there for a reason, and it's a beneficial and a good reason. I'm not there to just sling product at them, and that serves me well. And I try to communicate that to my salespeople. Sometimes it works good, and sometimes they just can't get past the idea that they're there to, hi, I'm John, you want to buy something? Yep. So
yeah. Yeah. How do you maintain that mindset of service first when, you know, maybe there's been how many umpteen number of salespeople are going into that person's office every week to compete for their time, right?
Right.
And the wall is so thick and so yeah. high, right? To get in there with that new customer. Talk to us a little bit about how do you maintain that mindset of service and be okay with it when they just say, hey, like, not another one, get out of here.
So one of the things that I try to do, so I use a few techniques that are kind of weird, but so there's different things that happen in different situations. So if it's a true cold call where I've got a prospective customer that I want to do business with, usually it starts a couple weeks in advance, and I ask around, I find out how they pay their bills, I find out what kind of business they do, and I'm familiar with them. Then I do some Googling and research and try to find articles or a YouTube video or a podcast they've been on. So I identify kind of what the company's about. Okay. So I've got some knowledge of their of their business. And I'm talking about a, let's say, not just a small customer, but more of a larger customer, how I'd approach this. And if I don't know who the manager is, who's the decision maker, what I often do is go drive around the farm and try to catch one of their employees or go to their shop. Shop is a great place to go because nobody wants to talk to the mechanic. He's out there by himself usually, and nobody pays any attention to him. So you show up and you ask him, "Hey, I'm looking for the guy that, the farm manager or the owner," and he'll tell you. And so you ask him and say, "Well, his name is John, and where's John's office?" "Oh, it's," and he tells you where the office is at. And then I ask him a few questions about the company, and I always ask his name, the mechanic's name. And then I roll up into the office unannounced, and there's a secretary who's on guard, right? So what I do with her is I walk in and I say, "Hey, my name is Carrie Crum, and I'm from this company, and I'm looking for John. Is he here?" And she says, "Oh, no, well, what do you want?" I said, "Well, I was down at the shop talking to Jose, and Jose was telling me that John's up here during the day. So I now have a connection. I'm not just some guy off the street. I obviously know somebody at their company who's been referred to." And surprisingly enough, it changes the whole interaction. And now I start talking to her about the boss. "Well, when is he not here? When is the best time to get him? I do some business with you guys, some of your neighbors, and we're having really good success. And I've got a few things that I might be able to help him, but I'd like to catch him." And she'll actually, a lot of times, will tell you when he's there. "Well, he's here every Thursday at 1 o'clock for a agronomy meeting. You can catch me after that." Then I make a point to come back. So once I've done this process and I get in front of John, oftentimes the secretary, if he's there on my second visit, will go get him and tell him I'm there. And she acts like she knows me. And because of this familiarity and this rapport that I built, all of a sudden I get in the door and he'll come out sometimes and say, "What do you want?" I say, "Hey, I don't want to jump you. I do business with your neighbors. I'm doing business with this guy." And I usually drop the names. And then so I build legitimacy of what I'm doing. I said, we're a specialty fertilizer company. We have really good products, and our pricing structure is very good. We're finding a lot of success. Our business is growing a lot. I'd love to schedule a meeting with you in a week or two when you have time. I'll be back up here." And I always have two dates. So I say, "Hey, I'm usually here on Tuesdays or Thursdays. What's better for you, morning or afternoon?" And they'll say, "Well, mornings." "Okay, how about is Tuesday?" "Well, Tuesday doesn't work. I have this. Come Thursday." "So Thursday at 10? Okay, bam. And my appointment's made. And then that's usually how I get in, to be honest. And it works pretty well. I would say
Beautiful.
that's about an 80% success rate when I use that model.
Love it. I love it. I love the approach. I really, really do. And here's why. I've talked to people for a long time and all the different sales trainings that we've done. And I've always recommended picking, giving them a couple of options instead of saying, "Hey, would it be okay if I stopped out?" And then we got to go through the whole process of when, right? And like, "Hey, what are some good times for you?" And then if we're doing this virtually, not in person, we're 15 emails deep into this damn thing, and maybe 6 weeks before I finally get a meeting.
Right. That happens.
Right?
Oh,
And it doesn't work that way. So we say, "Hey," and then when you think about working with a decision maker, they're anything you can do in that process to remove the friction for their decision making as to why they maybe would want to spend a little bit of time with you or not, is the way to go. So you give them a couple of times, and you've done so much of that in your process of stopping out. Don't go straight to the decision maker. Go find someone else. Build a relationship with somebody that knows them. If it's a solo shop, or if you're going to a farmer instead of maybe a B2B situation like you're in, find a friend in town that knows them and is willing to make an introduction or tell you a thing or two. There's so many ways you can go about it. Or if you're in the, today in the online world, obviously we can go. If there's a prospect that I have, well, I'm going to go look and see who else do I know on LinkedIn that knows this guy
right.
or this gal, and who might be willing to make an introduction. We set two appointments already today, Carrie, doing exactly that strategy, leveraging someone else's introduction to get the appointment.
No, it
So
works. It
it
really does.
does.
It's a good, it's a good pathway in. And the other thing, I ask my salesman always, I ask him, what is the single biggest tool that we have in sales? What's your biggest tool? I always ask him. And they all say the products or a product book or this or that. And I said, nope, your single biggest tool is your steering wheel on your truck, right? You got to turn it to go down a driveway. Because I really have a tough time with trying to set, I never get success with emails or even phone calls. I always get success when I'm face to face. So when I'm looking for customers or trying to set a meeting, I prioritize going face to face because they can't. It's much harder to say no when they're looking at you than when it's an email or a phone call, because they can hang up or delete your email. So yeah, I'm a big in-person person.
Yeah, I love it. It's so intentional, right? Which is the whole point of this podcast, right? The intentional agribusiness leader. Like, how do we be intentional? This is where I think a lot of people get lost in their sales process, and sales leaders who are listening to this, pay attention, right? There's real intention and there's real process with everything that Kerry's talking about that he's doing, right? And what most people do is they get stuck thinking, I gotta stop in, and you know, the secretary kicks me out, so I don't get to go back. Right. Or I stop in one time and this guy doesn't want to talk to me. I can't go back. No, listen, there are at least 15 other angles with which you can approach this person. I promise you, he or she knows someone else. Go get to know them. Go find a way to serve them. Get to know the neighbors more. Go do a really good job serving the neighbors. Keep this person at the forefront of your mind, on the top of your prospect list. But life will show you other ways if you're intentional enough to look for them.
Well, the other thing you have to be, So to give you an idea, one of my better customers that I have, it took me from the time I first called on him to the time I got in front of him to talk about something, 9 visits before I ever saw him. I just said, every time I was in the area, I would stop in and stop in and stop in and stop in. And finally, he got tired of seeing my cards on his desk. And he was there and I was there, and he came out and said, you know, you've been coming here. He goes, I got like 9 or 10 of your cards. Just come back and talk to me and see it. Let's just get this over. And he's turned into one of my better customers. And he's super hard to get into because, you know, he's a very well-known farmer. And if you do business with him, he's like a bell cow, right? If you do business with him, you can get in a lot of places because they know that nobody gets in there. So if you're in there, you're in there for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big winner for me. But that's the other thing, along with intention, is you have to be perseverant. You have to persevere. You have to be tenacious. You can't stop. If he's a target and you want to get, and if you believe that you can help him, you've got to continue to just pound on him until they relent. It's almost like a full-on assault at that point, because it's a game.
Well, that's how I think about it. For me, it becomes a game.
Yeah.
Right? Like if they're rejecting me without knowing me, it's not really about me, right? They've got their walls up because maybe some other salespeople have let them down, or other products or services haven't been as good, or whatever, but they don't know me, you know?
And so I focus a lot on that, right? So it's funny when I go, so now I spend most of my prospecting with my salesman. If they have a client they want to go to, I said, listen, let me go with you. I can get us in. We get in front of a customer and we'll spend an hour with them, and I don't talk about business at all. I'm pretty much asking about their business, and I really focus on building rapport with them, finding out people we know in common, talking about business I do with other people, talking about other problems, and then I ask him questions and I engage him, and it turns into a genuine conversation of spending time together. Yeah. And then the business stuff often gets done in the last 10 minutes. And then we walk out the door and the salesmen are like, I don't understand that at all. We didn't talk about business at all until the last 5 minutes. Then we got a whole bunch of stuff done. I said, that's because we spent our time getting to know him and putting his guard down and getting him familiar with us. And once you start genuinely caring about his business and he feels that you're not just another guy trying to sling him a product, they will understand that you're there to help. And it works. It really does.
Mm-hmm. It makes such a big difference.
Hey team, please forgive this quick intrusion into the podcast, but I have a really important announcement that I want everybody to get their earballs on. And that is that we have an upcoming Thriving Leader event coming up August 21st and 22nd. The Thriving Leader is our flagship program. We have run this thing over 135 times across the broad scope of agriculture. Thousands of people have gone through this and our coaching programs, and our public events each year are free. We only run 2 of these per year because of that. And your next chance to get access is coming up on August 21 and 22. The next one will not be until 2025. So we hope to see you. It's in Kansas City. Head on over to thriving-leader.com. That's thriving-leader.com. You get all the details and to book a meeting to see how you can get free access for you and some of your team coming up at the Thriving Leader
in Kansas City, Missouri, August 21st and 22nd, 2024. We'll see you there. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, with your, with the, those that you lead, those that you, you know, have led. It's one thing for us as sales leaders to know how to do this, but when you're building a team and you're trying to influence others to be able to do the same, what success or challenges have you had in trying to get others to do the same?
Yeah, that's the hard part. One of the first things I start to realize is trying to understand what a person's strengths are, right? So if you've got a person that's really good at cold calling and recruiting customers, the last thing you want to do with that person is try to pigeonhole them into being an account manager. Let the hunters go hunt and feed them and let them go, you know, fish. And then you can build a team behind him to catch the fish and clean them and gut them, you know. So recognize in your team who's good at what. And you have to design a system that rewards everybody in that process, right? So that's the hard part. The other thing I'm a control freak. I'm not saying I'm a good salesman. I'm going to say most good salespeople tend to be control freaks. And I am that. I like to control the process. I'm super fussy about who communicates with my customer. I want to be the guy that the customer looks upon, right? So that's challenging when you're trying to lead a team because you should lead from behind, not from the front, even though, you know, in battle it's different. But I've really worked on this. When I changed jobs, I've really tried to put in place a servant leadership model, which is really hard, right? Because the fear scares me to death, you know, giving control. So I pushed a lot of the control to my salespeople, and I backed off, and I kind of coach them and then let them go out. And so I spend my time convincing them and teaching them how I think and how they should make decisions, how I make decisions, so that if they get in a position where they have to make a decision, they understand what I'm going to maybe do, and maybe they'll make a better decision that I'm going to not be upset with. So it's a teaching model, really. I try to teach them about the way I do things, but then I try to encourage them to put their own brand on it. So it's the biggest problem I have. I mean, it's a big challenge. I don't have the answers to them. I'm feeling my way as well.
Yeah. Well, that's the toughest challenge I think that everybody has. Anybody who's a great salesperson, you know, doesn't always necessarily necessitate that we ought to be in a sales leadership role, but often you find yourself there and you know how to make that sale happen. If you could just be in on top of every one of those 150 deals that you got to make this year, like no problem, but you don't have the bandwidth. Nobody has the bandwidth for that kind of a thing, right? Or however many it pertains to. So how do we roll that out and get the team to be able to level up? Always the challenge. And I appreciate you sharing that, because that's what I think a lot of people really, you know, really get stuck with. But you did bring up a couple of cool points in there, which I want to highlight. One is taking that servant leadership mindset. As a trainer, as we were growing the training business in the late 20 teens, there came a point where we were doing so many live training events that I couldn't be there to do them.
Right.
And the company had, it said Mark Jewell Speaking and Training. That was the original name of the company.
Right.
So people, there was an expectation there's going to be this Mark Jewell guy in the room, right?
Yeah.
And we ended up rebranding under MJST, which was still just my initials. But what it did was it started to take me out of the spotlight. And now, actually, in our sales process, I will set the expectation with you that I'm not going to be doing the coaching, and I'm not, and I may not be at the event. In fact, maybe somebody else will sell it entirely, and it's just, I'm just over here quarterbacking the business. But how that started was I had to get comfortable sitting in the back and just let the team lead the event. Even if it looked like it was going to be a train wreck, just let them go. And the more I got out of the way, the faster they grew. The more I intervened, the more I slowed down the process. Does that make sense?
I see that too. So I do that in the whole company. So in my role, I'm not just a sales leader. I actually run the company here. So I've got, I oversee operations, and I really struggled with the operation side of it because I really turned those guys over. And I tell them, listen, I'm doing this experiment, right? I'm trying this servant leadership thing. It's not my natural thing. So we're going to go through some bumps in the road, but I'm going to let you guys make the decisions. When you guys need something. You guys get together and you come to me with what your decision is, and I'll tell you if I like it or not. But that's it. I you know, and maybe I want you to tweak it, but man, it really forces me to bite my tongue and to look away, because I know they're going to cause a problem, but they need to learn it. And it's, which is what you said, you have to let them grow. And that is, to me, is the white knuckle thing, is that is super scary. And I'm getting better at it. My ownership sometimes questions my, because they're more control freaks, and as well, and they come here and they don't, there's things that they don't necessarily like sometimes when they're visiting, but I'm like, listen, there's a method here. They got to learn. I can't, because what happens if I get hit by a truck, right? Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right. So my old employer always believed in one of his things. They were Dave Ramsey people. So they believe in having getting hit by a truck plan, and which I kind of like. And so that's what I've taken for this model, is if I can't be there to make the decision, they've got to make the decision for me. And likely at the lower levels, they understand what needs to happen better than I do. So, so they just need to take ownership of it. And it's going okay. It's getting a little better, but it was bumpy. It's not a fun road for me.
Yeah. Well, that's the name of the game, man. It's leadership is messy stuff. Behavior change with people is messy stuff. And for some reason I got into this business on purpose, and I like it. I enjoy it. I like watching it. I like advising on it. We do a lot of coaching. We'll run, Carrie, somewhere north of 4,000 hours of coaching calls this year.
Oh, wow.
As a company, right? And so we get a front row seat to a lot of messy stuff, right? What? So we see it, but it's so worth sticking it out and having a very clear plan. Right now, I mean, my team is required, every time we create a new process or something that we're doing on a consistent basis or semi-consistent basis,
right,
it damn well better have at least a video screen recording of the thing that you're doing. I don't care if it's putting it right, making an invoice inside of the invoicing software.
Right.
Screen record that, so that if today, right now, I'm the only one who knows how to do that. But right. if we were to expand a little bit and then say, okay, hey, you're now going to take over invoicing, the video's in the folder on finance.
Right.
Like just to watch that now we can scale up so much faster and be ready for growth or be ready for acquisition. Right, which increases, you know, the single most significant thing in recording an SOP is the teaching of it. When I teach someone, I remember it better.
Right, I get it. Yeah,
and I see flaws in my process. I see, well, I've got this really roundabout, sort of jerry-rigged way about going about doing things, and it works for me, but that's probably not going to work for anybody else.
Right. Have you ever seen the? I can't remember the name of the guy. There's a YouTube video that I've watched a bunch. He's a submarine captain. He talks about he took over the worst submarine in the fleet, and he turned into the best one. But he stopped making decisions and let everybody else. He pushed all the power to the bottom. That's really what I'm using, kind of as my model.
Yeah, I like it.
And it's hard. He said, you know, he told his crew, listen, I'm not going to make any decisions. You guys run the boat. I'm going to guide you along, right? And it took a bumpy road, but in the end, he turned that ship into the best submarine, rated submarine in the Navy, and so that's kind of my model. The other thing that makes it easier is I'm a Simon Sinek guy. I like some of his stuff.
Yep, love it.
And one of his big concepts, and I tell my all my employees this: I said, you guys are like my kids. Okay, when I hire you, I make you like one of my children. Now, the difference between being an employee and a child is I can't fire my children when you guys screw up. Okay.
Right. Right.
And so I take the position that I can pretty much guide you and teach you through any of these events. I won't tolerate stealing, and I won't tolerate dishonesty, and I won't tolerate trying to screw a customer. I won't tolerate being disrespectful to your teammates. So there's certain things that are no-goes, but we'll work with you to get through that. But having an idea that I need to help each of those people be better is easier than creating a disposability of them, right? Because training, as you know, is super expensive, and getting a guy up to speed and turning him loose after a year and a half is really expensive for the company. So I try not to do that. I try to teach them, and sometimes you have to part ways, but it's really rare. I really tried everything to do that before I pull the plug.
Sure thing. Yeah. Well, it's worth the investment of time and intention and resources to do a good job with these people up front and bring them up to speed and be intentional with how we're curating the workspace, because it becomes so costly and so frustrating. The premise of the work that I'm doing just around the word intention stems from my years of research, and specifically a year of research just on intention. And what we say around here is that all the times in life I've become the most resentful, and resentful of what my business, my coworkers, my customers, my spouse, my friends, whatever, all the times myself for that matter, all the times in life I've become the most resentful are always because of the times in life I've been the least intentional.
Right. I would agree with that. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Yeah,
I get it.
I think that the other thing I try to do in that intention is to be straight, right? I don't beat around the bush. I try to catch my people doing good, mm-hmm. and tell them. I try to make a point to thank them when they do something that I appreciate.
Yeah.
It's not all negative feedback, because it's easy to get in that mindset where you're constantly giving, you know, they do great, and you're constantly pointing out the 20% of the great stuff they're not doing. But that, I've found that creates a lot of resentment too, because in the salesman, in the employee's mind, it's like, look, I do all this good stuff, and he shows up and he only does is care about this one little thing. So I try to do both with a balance. But the other thing I try to do too is I just talk to people like I talk to my kids. I just tell them straight. There's no beating around the bush. If you're doing something stupid or dumb or something that's not appropriate, I'm just going to tell you straight. I mean, hey, we got to fix this. Just get your head out of your butt. This is not working. So let's work together. How can I help you fix this behavior? And I get them involved. And like I say, it's just a messy process. I wish I had a book that I could tell you, oh, I'm an amazing manager. I consider myself kind of a poor manager, but but my ownership and my people tell me I'm good at it, but I don't feel like I'm good at it. I feel like it's a mess.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it feels like a mess to us, but there's an anointing on our lives, because it just, we find ourselves in these leadership roles and the space to help, you know, to help people out. So
the other thing
you must be doing something right. You landed here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing I try to do too, is I try to manage people like I want to be managed. You know, I've had a lot of managers in my life that I can't stand. And I try to put myself in those spots and say, man, I'm starting to sound like this guy or that guy. And it's like, oh my God, I hated that guy. So, yeah. You know, so I'm a Christian. That's my faith, but I'm a messy Christian, right? I'm not and it's the hardest thing I do every day is living that kind of a life.
You bet.
And it's the same thing with this leadership thing. And it's messy, and it's, I'm working at it, but you know, I hope to get better.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the mission of all of us, right? And that's why we keep making these episodes. You know, we're several dozen episodes, more than that. I mean, it's probably five dozen episodes ahead of you, depending when we actually publish this. But man, I mean, there's it's a process, and we have to keep learning and keep leaning in and keep listening to what people are doing, because that, my friend, is part of the process. Carrie, it's been really cool to have you on here. I appreciate your time so much. How do we find you guys? If we're in California and we're looking for your kind of services, how do we reach out?
So we just relaunched our website here. It's Agri. It's a long name. Agri Technovation, TechNovation, Inc.com. And okay. That's you can find us on the web. We're based in Fresno, California. We service from Sacramento clear down to Ventura, all over the center part of the state. We operate in Australia, New Zealand, Peru, Chile, Uruguay, South Africa, all the Southern African countries. So we're a global business, but we run it like a family business. So it's a really interesting, interesting thing. So I appreciate you having me here, and I really enjoyed our chat today.
Love it. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks so much for being here.
Great.
I hope today's episode brought you a great deal of value about what it takes to lead life and lead in this industry with intention. If you want to go deeper on the topic
of leading with intention, I encourage you to head on over to intentionaltoolbox.com and get the 7 free tools that will help you to lead your life in all areas with a greater deal of intention. That's intentionaltoolbox.com. And finally, if this message resonated today, if there's something in here that you got value from, I promise you there's someone else in your life who also would get value from this. So please share the episode, share the podcast, and make sure that you subscribe.